Sometime between age 35 and 38, my body became red soil. I returned to the earth, resting between layers of red stone, wood, mud, rock, and clay, where I'm from. From this place, I realized with certainty, I'm not going to be a mother to a human child in my lifetime. It's not a calling I need or want to answer. I want the many possibilities that await for me in the next phase of my life, knowing this is not a role I'm going to step into. That space of possibility is what calls to me. It's not the most extraordinary news on the planet, but it does feel important to say. In this day and age where, as a society, we still look upon women, femmes, or people we perceive or assign as women like they're lacking something once they get into their 30s or 40s and they don't have that conventional married with kids life. Like, somehow you're not a real adult, or the commitments you have unrelated to children aren't as important or valuable. Or like you need to be pitied because you don't have this thing that will make your life complete. It feels important to say in this moment in time, with the recent overturning of Roe v. Wade and many other instances of colonial governments digging their heels into the control they've been hell-bent on asserting over our bodily autonomy for centuries. It feels important to remind myself and anyone else who needs to hear it that what I realized I don't want is quite fulfilling. As for what I do want, well, I already told you in the last episode that I do know for certain I want a life partner. Earlier this summer, I was cleaning out my altar and I found parts of a prayer that I wrote in 2015. To call a long-term partner into my life. On the piece of paper, I had written down a bunch of things that I wanted, including this sentence. I want to get married, and maybe even someday have kids. Part of that sentence isn't true anymore. But it was the date I had written on top of that paper that floored me. It said, April 27th, 2015. April 27th, 2016 is the exact last day that I saw my dad alive before he transitioned 5 days later. On April 27th, when I said goodbye to my dad, I also said goodbye to my parents' marriage of almost 50 years. April 27th is when I understood for the first time what it actually means to invite someone into your heart that you're not interested in ever breaking up with. April 27th is when it was clear to me what you're actually committing to at that altar. You're agreeing to be there when it's time for one of you to leave your body. That's what it means to say, yeah, I'm the one. And you're the one. I am a time keeper. This is my gift, given to me by my ancestors. I am here to carry, experience, and share the medicine of time. When we time travel, we enter portals through numbers, through exact dates and times on a calendar. I entered April 27th, 2015, and traveled to that same number a year later, and I saw my parents at the end of their marriage, and I said, I get it now, what it means to pray for a life partner. I get it, and I want it. I want all of it. So I'm going to write it down on this piece of paper 1 year earlier. But the next part of that sentence, maybe someday I even want kids. Maybe someday. That maybe is the difference that I cannot tell between myself and my ancestors. That's the difference I can't tell between the rivers of blood, between mothers who birthed daughters, who birthed mothers, who birthed daughters, until they eventually birthed me. The way that love blurs, attaches, and unites. That's the difference I can't tell between myself and my kin. That's my maybe. But something happened to me in the last 7 years since I wrote that prayer. I became more grounded. I became red soil. I became more willing to live here, now. Somehow the expansion and in some cases explosion of my spiritual gifts, my ability to time travel, the potency of my multidimensionality, my channeling came coupled with wanting to be present in my body. Wanting to experience the physicality of my life viscerally. Visceral. Like felt in the internal organs. Like a surgeon holding a beating heart in their hands in the dark. Perfectly content. Greetings, good listeners. I'm your host, storyteller, and spell weaver, Shanga Tagore. You are tuning in to my divination channel. Welcome to Otherworldly Giants. Otherworldly Giants is a creation company and storytelling school where we create and study stories that serve as altars for birthing a new world paradigm. Season 1 on our podcast is dedicated to grief, love, and Buffy, where we weave together stories, teachings, and colors into one mind-bending, awe-inspiring world full of magic, animals, and ancestors among us. This episode is called Red, a love letter to the Chosen Ones, and Christina Yang. A few notes to begin. 1. As I share my personal relationship with motherhood, I want to say that I have a great respect for people who are parents to human children. It's revolutionary work. Some of the most powerful ancestral healing happens through parenting and intimacy. 2. I want to acknowledge that not everyone who gives birth considers themselves a mother or a woman. I see you and I love you, my trans and genderqueer prismatic kin. I use the language of mothering in this episode intentionally, however, because I am speaking to the archetype and the ancestral energetics specific to mothering, even if those energies can manifest and express through people with all sorts of gender identities. And finally, a big part of the reason I realized I don't want to be a mother to a human is because I was finally able to recognize and respect the other kinds of mothering I have been doing for a long time. I am a community mother. I'm a mother to animals. And I'm a mother to stories. Let me tell you all about it. 1. I'm a queer community mother. Over the last decade, I have worked as a professional astrologer and queer performance art producer, creator, and mentor in the city of Tuckeranto, which is the indigenous Mohawk roots of the name Toronto. It started in 2010 with hosting radical group storytelling workshops in basements for queer BIPOC youth. Then, inviting community members into my home one-on-one and reading their birth chart for 2 hours. Co-creating art spaces with my queer and trans BIPOC friends on our own terms outside of the white, straight mainstream. Over the years, we've shared drag, dance, burlesque, and theater projects. We've learned and are still learning what it means to build consent and accessibility into the foundation of the art we create, rooted in body love, self-love, racial and intergenerational healing. I need to acknowledge, first and foremost to myself, and then to anyone else listening, that I have been a heartbeat in this community. I've provided deeply healing and in many cases life-changing astrology readings to communities of queer and trans people, survivors, racialized and disabled people. As an artist, I break intergenerational cycles of silence with my words. I'm a grief worker on the stage. I'm a survivor on the mic. I am intimacy in public. I have been instrumental in creating spaces for other queer, BIPOC, disabled loved ones to learn artistic skills, be big, bold, and wild on stage, and share their stories on their own terms when so many dominant arts institutions don't give us funding, antagonize us with all of the isms, and tell us that our voices are not needed. I am a heartbeat, and it's important for me to claim this because it was only when I got to my mid to late 30s, after more than a decade of doing this work, that I could even recognize what I've been doing as mothering. I didn't see myself as a mother because I don't fit into the many typical ideas of who a mother is supposed to be. We tend to forget that mothering is done for communities and not just the nuclear family. I join a long lineage of mothers, queer, trans, black, indigenous, women of color, who have kept their communities alive, connected, and inspired by creating their own publishing companies, writing heart-healing books and plays, creating radical healing arts education spaces, and more. I am the kind of queer community mother that connects you to the stars, that builds you up, encourages your dreams, and helps you remember who you are. My mothering reminds you of your brilliance and access to self-knowledge, your inherent divinity and magic. 2. I'm a mother to animals. I am a mother to 2 gorgeous twin black cats. And just like the great myth of the twins, one cat currently lives on Earth and one lives in the sky. I am an animal companion, an animal communicator, and a carrier of animal medicine. You'll see these themes emerge again and again on this podcast because animals are my gift. They are the most precious gift given to me that I give back. As an animal communicator, I have the ability to talk with animals and translate their messages, whether they're in body or spirit, earth or sky. Caring for an animal reminds us of the fluidity of roles we play in relationships. When we mother an animal, we can experience them as our child, our elder, our life partner, and our best friend all at once. We mother our animals through childhood, elderhood, transition, and in many cases through chronic illness and disability. Animals are spectacular companions to witches, energy workers, and ancestral healers. When an animal chooses us, they do so because they want to assist us with our mission and our magic. Especially important to survivors, queer and trans people, disabled, neurodivergent, mad folks, our animals understand us and support us when humans can't. For people who live with domestic violence or get kicked out of their homes, it's often an animal that is their protector and their safe family. The grief many of us experience when losing an animal is enormous because we're losing a child, an elder, a life partner, and unconditional love, all at the same time. I am incredibly lucky to be in community with one of the most powerful masters of animal medicine on the planet today, and he just happens to be my birthday twin, and I am literally recording this when the clock is saying 6:13, which just happens to be our birthday, June 13th. I'm grateful to call him a teacher and a friend. In my spiritual community, he is affectionately known as Maestro David. He has a business and a podcast called Somos Animales. We are the animals. check out his work, and if you are called to dive deeper into your own relationship with animal medicine, he also does one-on-one sessions with people. You can find all the links in the show notes. Maestro David has helped me understand that my two twin cats are energy healers, grief workers, and spell workers, just like me. My earth kitty helps me heal my masculine lineage, and my sky kitty helps me heal my feminine lineage. My sky kitty lived with us on Earth for 13 years before she transitioned to the spirit realm at the beginning of 2022. I am a death doula. This is my gift. I held my baby, my elder, my best friend, as she took her last breath, and this is how I know what it means to pray for a life partner. To invite someone into your heart that you're not interested in ever breaking up with. This is what it means to say, yeah, I'm the one, and you're the one. About 6 months later, I had a conversation with my sky kitty. I asked her what she was up to in the spirit realm. She said, I help other cats transition. I travel around the world and find other humans who are holding their babies, their elders, at that sacred altar. I sing to them. I help the cat rise and come home to spirit. I help the human let go. I remind them it's not their fault, and that they're a good mom. I remind them that it's always possible to communicate across worlds. In this way, I continue Shanga's legacy. I share our gifts at an unprecedented rate. I help cats and humans all over the world in many times and places at once because I am multidimensional in the sky. 3. I'm a mother to stories. At Otherworldly Giants, we remember that stories are alive, just like our ancestors, just like we are. We don't just create stories. We birth them. We raise them. We parent them. I am a storyteller and spell weaver and cycle breaker. I crack codes of liberation with my voice. My stories are my children. They are my gift. And it is dangerous to be a mother. When you're a survivor in public, there is no guarantee your story won't be met with disbelief, antagonism, disgust, or violence. When you have the audacity and ambition to break cycles with your words, you get no guarantee of safety. When you're a grief worker on the stage and a witch who doesn't hide her magic from the mic, there is no way to know. Will my story be ridiculed? Tossed aside as irrelevant? Ignored? Beat down? Entirely misunderstood? Will the labor of your blood, guts, and internal organs receive a lukewarm, polite, oh, that's nice, which is somehow worse than straight-up violence? Will you give birth to the most groundbreaking, life-changing story that you are sure is an actual legitimate miracle, only to find that nobody wants to listen? It takes courage to turn your heartbreak into flowers. You have no control over how your story will be received. It's not up to you. The people will have their own interpretations. They'll relate to it in their own way. They'll see things that you didn't see. At the end of the day, it's what your heart needs. Because you never wanted to raise this child alone. You want it raised by a village, lifted by a collective. You want your story to live on after you're gone. You want it loved by the world. You have to trust that your story will go where it needs to go. It'll be adventurous and it'll be self-protective. It'll avoid places where it doesn't want to live And sometimes that means endless rejections from publishing companies or a big pile of better luck next times from funders. You're not in control if your story one day lands in the hands of someone who will not care for it, make it feel like it's a liar, and attack it for the way it thinks, moves, and works. And you will not be able to shield yourself from that pain because you are its mother. You have put your body in the line of fire for your story, and you do it again. Because when it's just you and your gift, when it's you and a beating heart in your hands, that's the safest place in the universe. You'll go through every up and down imaginable with your gift. You'll want to give it up many times. You'll even walk away. But you'll come back when you're ready. On your own time, and your story will be waiting. There'll be no resentment, no rushing. It's just there, waiting to embrace you with an open heart, like no time has been lost and nothing has been missed. Wholeheartedly honored to choose you and be chosen. Storytellers are the chosen ones. We are the open heart surgeons of the world. Enter Christina Yang. Christina motherfucking Yang of Grey's Anatomy fame! In the year of our goddess 2022, I decided to embark on the utterly Homeric journey of watching all 18, yes, 18 seasons of Grey's Anatomy. Grey's is a soapy medical TV drama that follows a group of surgical interns at a hospital in Seattle, their career paths, their friendships, and their messy, messy love lives. I started watching because I just wanted something casual to unwind with at the end of the day. I certainly wasn't planning on speaking about it on my podcast. Yes, some of the storylines are ridiculous, some characters are very annoying, and one could talk for hours about problematic this and that. Thankfully, for my sake, I'm not taking on that particular giant. What surprised me as I watched through the seasons, though, was how fond I became of some of the characters. I've been impressed many times with the depth of character development and how they handle a number of serious subject matters with intelligence, complexity, and respect. I didn't expect to become so attached to these characters, but I did as I watched them grow from foolish interns to capable, confident surgeons, confronting their flaws and vulnerabilities and becoming masters of their craft. Most of all, I didn't expect to find my person, Christina Yang, played by the incomparable Sandra Oh. Christina is the main character's best friend, but she is quite clearly the heart of the series. Consider this your official spoiler warning, as I will be spending the next chunk of the episode talking about Christina's entire journey before the actor left the series at the end of season 10. Also note, I'll be touching on a storyline that includes abortion and related emotional abuse in a partnership. Christina is the most ambitious and competitive of all the interns. Right from the get-go, she's not afraid to admit she's destined for greatness. She knows what she wants, which is not true of any other intern. She's going to become a prolific cardiothoracic surgeon, i.e., a heart surgeon. It was certainly groundbreaking for the time, and still now, to have an Asian woman on screen full of the complexity and nuance of Christina Yang. Christina is highly intelligent, blunt, straightforward, braggy, and rude in a way that I absolutely adore. She's career-driven, a quality we often give Asian characters, but she subverts the stereotype because she's not trying to live up to anyone's expectations or approval. She's ferocious because it brings her joy. She's also unapologetic in her sexual expression, which is not often a quality that we allow Asian women to have. Christina is definitely not an ooey-gooey person, and she has many passions and priorities that have nothing to do with taking care of people's feelings. When she's young, she's awkward and uncomfortable around big displays of human emotion. Over the decade, she matures into a masterfully skilled surgeon with the ability to sit with people in their hardest moments. She doesn't patronize or sugarcoat the moment. She doesn't reassure people just for the sake of reassurance. She just tells the truth. She's not nice, but she's deeply loving. Every once in a while, a fictional character comes along and they resonate with you on a level you can't explain. It feels like they're a part of you. You have that heart and soul connection. The thing is, if you're a white person, you're not automatically like, oh my god, a well-written, nuanced white character, you're my person. You don't feel that way about just any and every white character because they're everywhere. But if you're Asian and you see a great Asian character, or if you're Jewish or disabled or trans and you see someone with your identity, right away, we go to bat for these characters. We claim them as our own just because they exist. But that doesn't automatically mean we resonate with them on a level that goes beyond social identity. It doesn't mean we automatically share that heart and soul connection. Season one of this podcast is a Buffy-centered podcast because Buffy the Vampire Slayer is one of those shows for me. Yes, it's a very white show with a lot of problems, but it's in my heart. The characters and storylines hit me where I live. I'm invested in them, not just because they're well-written good characters, but because I have a personal stake, pun intended, in a friendship with them. When I started watching Grey's, I knew Christina was a great character. She's super cool, a badass, and she's Asian, like me. Even though she's a completely different kind of Asian. I'm South Asian, Bengali, and she's Korean American, but still, I loved her just for that. I didn't expect her to hit me where I live. That feeling, honestly, knocked me off my feet, because I don't think I've ever experienced this before with a character on TV. To feel that deeper resonance on a soul level, heart level, and also connect as Asian women? That snuck up on me. It touches me in a way that I can't explain. It's probably why I'm starting a Buffy-centered podcast with a love letter to Christina Yang.
You're my person.
One thing that really speaks to me about Christina's journey is the quiet injustice that she experiences throughout the series, a tension between who people say she is and who she really is. She is repeatedly called emotionless, heartless even, regarded as someone who doesn't care about anything but her career. In heated moments, her male partners have called her closed off, frustrating, not vulnerable enough, and impossible to get close to. The writers have even put some of those words into Christina's mouth when she refers to herself as selfish. All of these things have been said about me, and at times I've even believed it about myself. The truth is, Christina has a love story with something that doesn't revolve around her human relationships, and that's threatening to her partners. To love someone like her, you have to be okay with sometimes not getting all of her attention, all of her intimacy, and all of her passion. Even so, there are many moments that Christina compromises her career and her sense of self to give her partner what they want. She knows exactly what she's giving up, but she makes the choice willingly because she's actually a deeply relational person. The complexity of her character shows us someone who is ambitious, but not individualistic. I was especially struck by the injustice embedded in her relationship with her teachers. white women mentors whose job it is to nurture and advocate for her growth as a heart surgeon. The first mentor goes out of her way to belittle Christina, block her from accessing learning opportunities, and badger her for being, quote-unquote, too full of herself. Her second mentor isn't as overtly cruel, but still ends up playing weird psychological games to, like, try and teach Christina some lesson about humility, which only ends up derailing Christina's ability to learn and practice her craft. As a viewer, it's so clear to me that this is a common type of racism that women of color experience from white women, especially in a power dynamic of teacher and student. It hinges on the racism of white fragility, that women of color can be smart as long as our intelligence is making white women feel good about themselves, and as long as our brilliance never threatens their power over us. I call this quiet injustice, because the story itself never fully acknowledges or calls it out, except for the one moment that Christina names exactly what is happening, even though she's just met with blank stares.
Okay, is it because I'm Asian? Is that your problem? You don't like Asian people.
Excuse me?
Why won't you teach me?
Then there's the injustice she experiences in the later seasons when she's married to trauma surgeon Owen Hunt, a white man. They have a major relationship conflict and, oops, maybe we should have discussed this before we got married, when they realize that he wants kids, but Christina doesn't want to be a mom. Owen first patronizes her, telling her that she'll eventually mature out of this phase and she'll change her mind.
The idea that your career is the only thing that will ever matter to you is frankly a young person's notion. After what you've been through these last few months, I would have thought you had a more nuanced vision of this whole thing already.
Well, I've grown up as much as I planned to, and I don't come around.
Then, emotional and psychological violence grows into a constant undercurrent in their relationship. Owen incessantly guilt trips Christina about her choice, telling her that she's self-centered and that she's a bad partner for not being willing to make quote-unquote fair compromises for their relationship.
Hey, you know what? There is no compromise. You don't have half a baby. I don't want one. Like, it isn't about work. This isn't a scheduling conflict. I don't want to be a mother.
I don't hate children. I respect children. I think they should have parents who want them.
At one point, Christina gets pregnant accidentally, and she has an abortion. In a heated moment, Owen goes so far to scream at her for killing his baby. While this storyline originally aired sometime in 2012, a decade ago, it was absolutely chilling for me to watch this for the first time in 2022, literally at the same moment that Roe v. Wade was overturned by the Supreme Court. Even though Christina never wanted to be a mother, she reminded me of how to care for my inner child and my inner artist. In healing communities, we talk a lot about the importance of nurturing our younger selves that still live within us. Just like it took me a minute to recognize myself as a mother, I realized I was carrying these knee-jerk assumptions of what I should do when I think of taking care of my inner child. Like, I automatically had this vision of sitting my child self down in a corner with a coloring book and crayons and giving them like an ooey-gooey pat on the head, like, oh, it's okay, here's some cookies. I mean, yes, give me cookies. But my inner child is ambitious as fuck. She's a dreamer. She wants her brilliance nurtured. When I was a teen, I was in the High School Musical. That year, honestly, I was the most talented person who auditioned for the lead role. But I didn't get it. The lead went to a white person. I got a side role, but I was still so hungry. I wanted to act, sing, dance, and grow as an artist. One day in rehearsal, we were working on a scene where I had lines, and the directors were paying attention to everything and everyone but me. And so I asked the director for some notes on my performance. They responded with, Oh no, honey, you're perfect. You don't worry about anything. You're doing great. And I was like, okay. Actually wasn't looking for reassurance or coddling. I wanted to learn. I wanted to be mentored. Why else would I be there if not to work on my craft? What are rehearsals for if not bringing our art to a state of excellence? People of color, artists of color, children of color, we are so often not allowed to be excellent and constantly pressured to be perfect. Never make mistakes, hold everything together, don't show vulnerabilities. This is especially pronounced for women of color artists when there's a lack of diverse representation and opportunities for us in art and entertainment. If we somehow make it, we are heralded as the beacon, the hope, the symbol for our race, with or without our consent. And if we don't uphold an impossible image of perfection at all times, we are attacked and subjected to violence. While many of us never even make it through the doors of theater school or film school or mainstream arts institutions, my experience as a queer community mother has gifted me with the abundance of what can happen when we come together to learn amongst ourselves. We share skills and knowledge, retrieve and remember our ancestral ways of art making, and we build circular mentorship relationships. We remind ourselves and each other of our excellence. Our training and our skills are just as legitimate as what we would learn in a prominent arts institution, and actually, in many ways, is more deeply developed, politically and creatively. At the same time, we deal with an enormous amount of pressure that comes from both outside and inside our communities to be perfect. We fear that if we fail at anything, our families and communities will fall apart and die, because that's the reality of colonial PTSD. We can't show our mistakes or vulnerabilities because, God forbid, white supremacy notices that and uses it against us. We learn at a young age that we have to figure out everything by ourselves. We have to be our own mentors. But just because we can mentor ourselves, that doesn't mean we don't need and deserve mentorship. Learning from someone who has more experience than you in our shared craft, like when they respect you for your self-knowledge and see you and support you in your brilliance, that has been one of the most enriching, fulfilling experiences I've ever had on a creative project. Even as I've had some really amazing mentorship experiences, I've also experienced very deep wounding in this dynamic many times throughout my life. It's an ancestral wound because of how colonization large scale has displaced us from our magic, our medicine, and intentionally damages our intergenerational relationships. It's hard to find the right teachers and mentors, especially when our elders have so much trauma to work through as well. Christina spends at least 2 or 3 seasons stuck in dynamics with mentors who won't teach her, and we see her slipping into a deep depression. She loses her spark, her drive, even her personality. She just stops trying. There's no challenge of being a surgeon that Christina can't meet and rise above. There's no mountain that she can't move. But when she has a teacher that won't let her learn, that's what takes her out of the game. That's what destroys her spirit. To know that you have a gift, but nobody will nurture it.
You know what? You should cut me.
What?
From the program. You have to make more cuts, and I should go. Because if you can't give me a brilliant cardiothoracic attending who is willing to teach me, then I can't get what I need from this hospital. Everyone is scared of losing their job, and so am I. But if I can't learn, if I can't use my gift, then I guess that scares me more.
The characters on Grey's Anatomy go through a big collective trauma at the end of season 6, and then another big trauma at the end of season 8. Following these violent events, everyone in the hospital slowly comes back to work, but Christina doesn't. Her peers seem to find a way to move past what happened and she wants to, but she can't. For a big chunk of time, she won't enter an operating room. Instead, she goes shopping or fishing or does things she doesn't care about, or she sits in a bathtub for hours on end instead of coming into work. How is it that the person who supposedly doesn't have any feelings or who cares about nothing but her career is the one who feels the impact of trauma so deeply that she's the only one out of everyone who can't move on? Because she's the heart surgeon. She's the heart of the story. Remember that prayer I wrote and spell I cast to bring in a long-term partner into my life? That was 2015. It's 7 years later, and that relationship still hasn't come into fruition. Why haven't I met my person yet? Because almost immediately after I cast that spell, I went through a tremendous amount of loss, grief, trauma, and honestly, it was fucking brutal. You wouldn't know it because I just kept going. A big part of me was able to absorb all the blows, process everything quickly, find my ground, and keep learning, growing, and healing like I always do. To the point where every part of my body was like, I'm good. I'm ready. Let's keep going. Where's my new love? Where's the new world? Where's the new? I'm fine. Every part of my body was ready, that is, except for my heart. My heart that said, I'm still grieving, and I'm not done, and I'm just going to sit here until I am. I won't be rushed. I'm on my own time. Christina is the part of the body that reminds us the heart is not going to pretend it's okay just because the rest of the body has moved on. The heart, on its own time, eventually opens again. Christina comes back to surgery. She's different. She's deeper. She's something like red soil. And more brilliant than ever. In her last season, Christina performs a groundbreaking procedure and gets nominated for the most prestigious surgical award. Her project is clearly the front runner, but she doesn't win. A white man wins. Her story ends when she wins something bigger and better than a white man's award. Christina gets a life-changing opportunity that she's always deserved, just handed to her. A new job, and finally the full recognition of her genius and capability. It's better than her wildest dreams. But her true win comes sometime before she gets that offer. During a power outage at the hospital, Christina is forced to perform heart surgery in the complete dark. At first, she's too scared to try, but then she rises to the challenge. Afterward, she says, I could hear the blood moving. I knew exactly what the heart muscle was thinking. And I realized, I feel like that all the time. Even in the boring procedures, I can feel pure joy, content. If you love a storyteller, a death doula, an animal companion, an artist, an ancestral healer, a cycle breaker, you need to understand that we may have many love stories, but one of them revolves around something that has nothing to do with our human relationships. It's our love story. With our gift. My ambition was never about dominance. Never a sign that I'm not relational and compassionate. My ambition is not a symbol of capitalism. It's an expression of my dedication. My ambition is red. It's a red planet, a red star system. It doesn't have a destination, only a rhythm and an orbit. It has a frequency. It's the fervor with which I engage my craft. It's the complexity of my artistry. It's the intensity of my magic and the generosity of my expression. It is the clarity of sound and the color that I become. That's when it happened. Sometime between age 35 and 38, I became red soil, and all of a sudden, all at once, I realized, I knew, I am the last one. I'm the baby of my family. I have one older sibling, but neither of us have given birth to a human child and probably never will. I can see my entire lineage behind me. Rivers of mothers, birthing mothers. The line goes on so far back, I cannot see where it begins. But I'm the end. Neither mother nor daughter. I'm the conduit. A mother and a daughter stand at the end of a bloodline, and you can't tell who's the baby and who's the elder. Everything they couldn't process or heal themselves, they just passed it on until it accumulated at the feet of this mother and this daughter, the last generation. Their feet are holding hurricanes, but they won't let it go. They can't. They can't pass it on this time. They know they're the end. It's more than what any two bodies can hold. It is too much. Until there was me. I'm the conduit. A conduit is a small but powerful object that can be inserted into a generation and used to channel massive amounts of otherworldly, multidimensional ancestral energy. In order to do its job, it needs visceral physicality, a body, bones, skin, blood, internal organs, and a beating heart. The conduit can channel, ease, and soothe rivers of hurricanes. The conduit has the ability not just to break cycles, but heal them. The conduit was born with the gift. They take what those who came before could not heal. They harness the energy and they fly across dimensions and timelines and throughout the multiverse. They weave the energy with their voice, their hands, and their stories. They transform rage into radiance, fear into courage, despair into purpose, violence into safety, noise into silence. In silence into song. I'm the conduit. Some call me a slayer. Some call me a killer. Maybe I'm both. Maybe I'm neither. All I really know is that I dance. The problem is, I'm never dancing for myself. Everywhere I go in the universe is dependent on the wounds and desires of the mother and daughter who came before me. If I want to travel, I have to wait for their hurricane to send me off somewhere. If I want to rest, I have to wait for them to take a break. And if I keep doing this dance, they never get the chance to learn any different moves either. This isn't working for any of us. We need open heart surgery. We need Christina Yang. We need the groundbreaking procedure that got her nominated for the prestigious award that she should have won but didn't. Sometime in season 10, a young boy came into the hospital and Christina diagnosed him with a rare condition called hypoplastic left heart syndrome. See, the heart is essentially made of two pumps, the right side and the left. When the heart is functioning optimally, the right pump feeds blood into the lungs, the left pump receives the blood and then feeds the whole body, which then feeds the blood back into the right pump and the cycle continues. Remember, the heart is an altar. In the altars that I work with, the right side represents the masculine lineage and the left side represents the feminine lineage. When the heart is happy, masculine and feminine work in partnership and reciprocity. The masculine feeds the lungs that supports the feminine to receive the wealth, and in turn, she feeds the entire world, masculine included. But what if the right side stopped pumping blood to the lungs? Remember, the lungs are where we carry grief. when the masculine cuts off its relationship with grief, the feminine has no choice but to overcompensate. The feminine has to take responsibility for their own grief as well as their partner's. Survivors have to figure out how to heal from abuse while also providing care for the person who hurt them. Mothers have to perform the work of an entire village in one day, every day. The left side of the heart has to be two pumps in one and feed the whole body while also giving to itself, and that really doesn't work. So it ends up sacrificing their need to eat. I can go without food. I can go without money. I can go without love. As long as the rest of the body is good, I'm good. Until I'm not. In rare instances, however, it is the left side of the heart, the feminine lineage, that stops pumping blood. It just stops. Like how Christina Yang just stopped. Hypoplastic left heart syndrome. It's what happens when rivers of mothers and daughters just stop. It's what happens when the feminine lineage is brokenhearted. But Christina had a conduit. In heart surgery, when you place a conduit in the body, it allows a heart with just one working pump to function and keep the body alive. It creates a channel for the blood to flow so the blood can bypass the part of the heart that is no longer working. It's a short-term solution, because one side of the heart is still doing the job for two, and eventually it'll get tired and shut down. The conduit will buy you more time. There are added complications of surgery. The risk is that the body can reject the conduit entirely. Think about it. The conduit is made of different material. It's foreign to the body. The body doesn't recognize this new thing that has been inserted into a generation. The conduit is here to help. It's here to stretch time. It's here to repair. But it's just so different than everything else that's come before. The body does the understandable thing. It tries to protect itself from a foreign presence. The body attacks the conduit, antagonizes it relentlessly until the conduit is the one to finally make the choice and say, "Okay, fine, I'll leave." It's dangerous to be a conduit. We are healers of heartbreak, and yet we're seen as killers. It's not our fault that a broken heart can't recognize us. And it's not the heart's fault for being broken. But see, Christina Yang wouldn't leave us with these impossible choices. Many surgeons before have performed this conduit procedure, so what made hers different? What was it that garnered her worldwide attention? She printed a 3D conduit, not a synthetic one, and that means she was able to code the conduit with the DNA of the body, so that when the conduit was placed into the body, it was recognized. Storytellers, cycle breakers, we are the open heart surgeons of the world. We are ancestral healers remembering how to dance for ourselves. We are the conduit and the surgeon, the feminine and the masculine. We are the baby and the elder. We're not afraid to go back into a body that once rejected us. We're not afraid of a broken heart. We crack codes, repair our familial DNA with ancient, primordial, celestial medicine made of the body, made of the earth, made of Grandmother Multiverse herself. She has never rejected us. She has always recognized us, all of us, always. Dear chosen ones, I hope today you will remember the truth of what it means to sit here at the end. I may never be the kind of revolutionary mother who passes on her healing to a human child, but I get to harness everything that has happened in my lineage, make it into magic, and let it spread. Through the mothering I do for community, for animals on earth and in spirit, and through my stories. The healing of my lineage will be shared with the world at an unprecedented rate and go further than it has ever gone before. But how do you write that last sentence? How do you put down a story that has raised you, that has been with you for so long you can't even see where it began? How do you finish?
We have to finish.
They're gonna miss you.
We have to dance it out.
Is how
That's how we finish.
We finish.
Now we dance it out.
Whoa, that was a beast. That episode was a beast for me to write, record, design, edit. It took me way longer than I planned. It was harder than I expected, and so satisfying to finally finish and share. So much so that I wrote a little behind the scenes on my creation process where I talk about the storyteller spell worker's principle: what you write, you call into being. I'm the one who decided to write a story about ambition. The process went accordingly. You can find that piece on the Otherworldly Giants Patreon page, as well as journal prompts and reflection questions inspired by the episode. Join us on Patreon if you'd like to support this work in general. You can also subscribe, give us a 5-star rating and review on your podcast app, or check out our reciprocity and reparations page, all of which you can find in the show notes. Please also spread the word and share this work with people in your circles. Find Otherworldly Giants on Instagram and Facebook, and check out shangatagore.com for more on our storytelling school and creation company. Until next time, be brave. Dance it out.